Our guest today is Calvin Smith. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
You are the executive director of the Western History Museum in Hobbs, also the Lee County Hall of Fame. I just want to show, this is one of your wonderful publications.
Yes, that's our newsletter.
And so you're really a beacon of light down there. But I've asked you, you've really taught me a whole lot about archaeology, particularly in New Mexico. So tell us a little about your background, and you will lead us into the reason I brought you here.
I got interested in archaeology through Boy Scouting and picked up my first arrowhead on a field trip. And I wanted to know more about that, just that point, just that single point. Who made it? When did they make it? How did they use it? Where did the material come from? And I still am looking for those answers, and it's been a long time ago. But I've enjoyed a 45-year career in museums. I actually was the first curator at Blackwater Draw Museum when I was going to school at Eastern. I got a dollar check, and I still have it for my work, which made me a professional. I was also director of education at Texas Memorial Museum at UT. Taught classes there, and then the first budget cut came, and I went to become the director of the Spindletop Museum at Beaumont. And another budget cut came, and I went to work for little Billy Clinton in Arkansas, who was then governor the first time around, and was director of Arkansas Museum Services. And then finally ended up at Waco, where I was the first director of the Dr. Pepper Museum and Free Enterprise Institute. Fortunately, I grew up on Dr. Pepper, not Coke, but it was a good experience. And then I went to work for Baylor University in 1983, retired in 2003 as chairman of the Department of Museum Studies and director of what became the Mayburn Museum Complex.
You were born... Where were you born, in Lee County?
In Odessa, but moved to Lee County in 1954.
Right.
And my dad worked for Phillips Petroleum Company 45 years. And I grew up in a company camp, all long since gone, a different society completely. And saved my money working in the oil fields, went to the University of Arizona to major in anthropology, archaeology, and starved out. My checks... from the oil field didn't match what I had to write in Arizona. So I went back and had been offered a scholarship at Eastern New Mexico University and said, I'm not going to that podunk school, and ended up with 3 degrees from there.
Yeah.
Actually four, but couldn't get 2 masters at the same graduation ceremony. So.
Well, and now you're back at your roots, and I'm hoping that you can tell us, you mentioned all these other sites, but New Mexico has some of the rarest, most important sites. And one of the ones that I want you to talk about is the Folsom Man Discovery Site, because you say it is probably the most historically important anthropological site, archaeological site in New Mexico.
In North America.
In North America?
Yes.
Okay.
A little background. I did this out of guilt. I really had the opportunity to meet Mrs. Grayson Mead, who was the wife of Grayson Mead, who I was investigating at the time, because he was probably one of the very first geoarchaeologists. He was a geologist, but he was into archaeology, and he was starting to bring the two fields together. And I went up to visit with Mrs. Mead in Agate, Nebraska. And that turned out to be a life event for me. She was the daughter of Harold Cook, who was the first professional on the Folsom site.
Yeah.
And she gave me a lot of original photographs that he had taken. And so I felt guilty for 40 years now about not doing something with them. And then almost 2 years ago now, I was asked by the American Association of Museums to do a museum assessment for the Folsom Museum. And I've done lots of those, including accreditation visits and other visits. And I wasn't going to do any more. I've got plenty to do. But when they said Folsom, I said, I will. And I went up, and incredible small museum. If you haven't been there, you need to go by, because it's in... an 1890s general store, and everything is still there. It's just an incredible experience. But in that is an exhibit on Folsom. And it was kind of, not quite what the public would expect from a regular museum. And so I offered, what happened is that they told me that the Folsom site, which is west of Folsom, New Mexico, was actually declared a state monument in the 1950s. Now think about how many state monuments have been created and improved and buildings erected, and there's still nothing there. And so I offered at that point in time to use the photographs and my knowledge of the Folsom site to actually put an exhibit together. And I wanted to make it a portable exhibit so they could put it in a vehicle and take it all over the state, because I felt like that people just aren't aware of this particular site. And so as I started to put it together, two elements came racing back to me as I re-researched the whole effort. One was that George McJunkett, a black cowboy, who became the foreman of the Crowfoot Ranch, was, for that day and time, was at the height of his profession. He was born in Texas but came to New Mexico at an early age, and was an extraordinary rider, roper, as a matter of fact, a fiddle player. But he actually was in charge of many white cowboys, and for that day and time, that's quite rare. He could also read and write, which was also, for that age, was rare. And as it turned out, he, after the flood of 1908, which took out most of Folsom, the small village of Folsom, and it also created, and something else a little known, created the one of the foremost heroines in New Mexico.
Yes, Sally.
The telephone operator, you don't think the telephones were around in 1908, but they really were. Most of the large ranches and families had telephones. And so she stayed at her post calling everybody she possibly could and was swept away and killed.
So she was calling to warn them.
That's right.
And
that's
at the risk of her own life, but how many lives she saved.
Absolutely.
I need to back up a little bit to remind our audience of our state's geography. So Folsom is in Union County, which is in the northeast corner of the state.
Right.
I think of it as being 7 miles from the Capulin volcano.
That's right. That's right.
So that's kind of a geologic and geographical focal point.
Right. It's kind of between Clayton and Raton, right up on the corner of Colorado and New Mexico.
Right. Right. So along came the flood,
right,
which had exposed some of these things. This gentleman, McJunkin, found
yes.
it.
Yes.
And then I think you have some pictures of some of the early early excavators and the
yes.
on the sites, because they're so evocative to me of that 1920s National Geographic, when all this boom in archaeology.
Right.
So if you could show us one or two.
The interesting part from the standpoint of realizing its importance was that Cook, Harold Cook, who was paleontologist at the Denver Museum of Natural History at the time, had been down to Lone Wolf Creek, Texas, which is near Colorado City, Texas, and had excavated a bison, which is an extinct form of bison, which is much larger than the ones that we call buffalo. These are bison antiquus, and these animals were 7 feet at the shoulder, had a horn span of up to 6 feet. In fact, this particular one came from the permafrost in Siberia, and you can see the size. These are the actual horns, and not not the actual the horn cores. And we actually took a portion of this horn and got DNA from it.
Uh-huh.
And we now know that they are not kin to our bison or buffalo.
Ah.
They're totally different species.
Really?
But as it turned out, Cook found two other gentlemen from Colorado City, Texas, found this bison, Ivy Webb and Nelson Vaughn, and Cook went down and actually blocked up the rib cage and the points and took them back to the Denver Museum of Natural History. And he reported in Science Magazine, 1925, of this discovery, putting humans, as he put it, good, dependable, definite evidence of human artifacts in the Pleistocene in America has at last been found. Yeah. And he was ridiculed, almost run out of the profession, because at that point in time, the dominant opinion was that humans arrived in the New World only a few centuries before Columbus. That's ludicrous to us today because we have 70-plus different language types. We have the high civilizations of Central America. We have the mound builders. We have the Pueblos. Yeah. So it took thousands of years to develop those cultures and languages. But Cook was devastated. He was trying to find that next site where he could prove that humans were involved with the killing of these extinct animals. And it happened to be Folsom. He had a connection that he had worked on a ranch near Raton and knew the banker there and the cattle inspector, Howarth. Well, Howarth got involved by going out and visiting with McJunkin to see these bones. And we don't know whether there was a point found at that point in time or not, but he did bring it to the attention of the Museum of New Mexico. And they didn't appear to have any interest.
I'm sorry.
So they went to the Denver Museum of Natural History. And Cook and Figgins, the director there, decided that it was worth investigating, if no more than to get a specimen for as a skeleton, a complete mm-hmm. skeleton. And they started that excavation in 1926. And they found some points. They found the bones. But all of them were removed before they could identify one that was still in situ
mm-hmm.
or in place. The next season, Schwaheim, who was the local blacksmith at Raton, who had connected with McJunkin as well and had known about the site, was the field coordinator for Cook and the Denver Museum of Natural History. Well, he found the very first point in situ. And it is called now a Folsom Point.
Uh-huh.
And this particular point, as a young graduate student at the Eastern New Mexico University, I didn't know any different, so I went to the Denver Museum of Natural History and asked if I could cast that point, make a replica of it. And they took it out of the case, and here it is. This is my uh-huh. cast of that particular point.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll do a close-up of that.
And the it just was coincidence, divine fate maybe, that at the same day, this was on August the 29th of 1927, the first Pecos Conference, which was a professional conference held at Pecos Pueblo, was started that day. And so we had the big dogs there. We had the director of the Field Museum, the director of the American History Museum. We had all of the major archaeologists in America at that point in time. And so they came down to look at the point in situ. And in all good things do happen for Cook in this case. Cook was taking pictures, and Figgins, the director of the museum, Barnum Brown from the American Museum of Natural History, Frank H.H. Roberts from Smithsonian's Bureau of American Ethnology, and A.V. Kidder from the Carnegie Institution saw this point in situ and said, this is it. And so this was the first time that humans had been accepted as part of the late Pleistocene in the Americas, which had to be 7,500 years old or earlier. As it turns out, the Folsom Point and the Folsom culture is about 10,000 years old.
So this was an absolute game changer.
Oh, yes.
And the fact that in some of these excavations of these extinct animals, they actually find the points in the vertebra.
Yes.
I mean, it's absolute proof.
Yes, yes.
That man was hunting these animals at that time.
Yes, there were lots of bones missing from this group of bison. They were cut marks on the bone where they had actually butchered it.
Yeah.
So yes, it was real. This is Barnum Brown and Shwaheem, who is pointing to the point that I just now showed at the original site.
Yeah, yeah. And that, again, you know, we've come so far from the thrill of those early discoveries. And so we'll put that actual history aside, and I'd like to look at some of the artifacts now. And why is... So the Clovis Point was much... The Folsom Point was much more sophisticated than the Clovis Point.
Yes, if you can get this. This is the classic Folsom Point, the type point, as a matter of fact. And you can see a groove or channel up both sides.
Right.
And that is the ultimate in flint technology, napping technology, because you can't take a flaking tool and make that what we call flute. It has to be by indirect percussion, which means that you had to have some vehicle by which to make that long flute.
Yeah.
And the idea of that flute is that you have a foreshaft, a lot smaller than this one, but the point goes on it, and it's the flute actually makes it so that it's much smaller entering the animal.
Mm-hmm.
And really, with the force of the atlatl and the dart, all you wanted was a sharp tip on the end of this foreshaft. And here's the process. You have a reed, which is called switch cane. It grows along the rivers. And you have a foreshaft, which can be wood or, in some cases, bone or ivory. And then in this case, I'm going to show a Clovis Point, which is earlier, but it is the predecessor to the Folsom because of the flint, the technology involved. And you put it in your foreshaft, and you grind the basal edges here so that the lashings aren't cut. And then you use the atlatl, which is an extension of your arm. I can't do it in here, but...
Yeah, no.
It gives you a longer arm, more force and leverage. And you put this right here, that's antler end. You put it like this, and you cast this overhand. And when it comes off of the atlatl with this... there's so much force that the dart itself, this is called a dart, this cane, actually bows like this.
Wow.
And it straightens out at about 15 yards, and it can go. One of our colleagues, Dr. George Frison from the University of Wyoming, went to Africa, tried it on an elephant, and put it into the animal 30 inches.
Wow.
So it could kill an elephant, literally.
So it could kill mastodons, bison.
That's right.
And those other, I think they're called megafauna.
That's
the
right.
The big
yes.
animals.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're learning more each day. That's the exciting part of this profession. You know, for instance, there's brand new articles all over right now about the earliest humans in North America, which is a new paradigm shift as well. And I think our colleagues are about where Kroeber and others were back in the 20s in the immediate acceptance, but it looks very promising. We have evidence now that humans came just as much out of Iberia as they did Siberia. I was taught that they came across Beringia.
That they came over across the Bering Strait.
But now we have evidence of this big blade technology being centered in Europe, coming across same time period during the advance of the ice ages, and coming along that ice cap into North America. Our earliest dates now in North America are on the East Coast, not in Yukon or Alaska.
Yeah.
They're on the East Coast as far back as 20,000 years.
Well, that's amazing. So let's just... So the rallying cry for this is Iberia or Spain, the Iberian Peninsula, not Siberia, Russia, and the Bering Strait.
I think it's both. I think we're all the sites that we're working right now are pushing back further, and I think we'll probably find that the Alaskan Peninsula and that area will show early dates. I don't know that it'll be this early. We haven't found it yet. But then we look at these new dates that are coming out, which are good solid dates. One in Pennsylvania at about 15, one in...
15,000 years ago.
That's right, yeah. I'm sorry, I just...
No. I just want to remind our audience that we're talking huge in the evolution of the planet. This is a big chunk of time.
Yes, it is.
And we thought before it was like maybe 5,000 years ago, and now we're pushing that time zone back to 15,000 years ago. Man created tools and use them to hunt animals that are now extinct.
That are very large beasts. And it took this size of projectile to actually, and with the kinetic energy produced by the atlatl and the dart and the foreshaft, to bring down an animal of this size. So it's an incredible technology just to even think about trying to make a living during that time period, because you had your other predators. We were a predator. But,
yeah, we were in competition with saber-toothed cats.
Dire wolves.
Short-faced bears.
Yes. Which were bigger than our Kodiak bear. The dire wolf was 5 feet tall. So your saber-toothed cat and the American lion, which was much larger than our African lion today. So it was a difficult time period for humans.
And I think I read that in Virginia they were dredging a river, and they came up with a mastodon tusk.
Right.
Again, with markings of weapons created by man from this same time period that we're talking about.
Yes, that's right. It looked to be Solutrean, which the Solutrean people in Europe, they kind of disappeared about 20,000 years ago. And so if they were marine technology, they would have come along that coastal line all the way down and into Texas, which we have now a 17,000-year-old date.
Well, it's amazing. It's really thrilling. And I really want New Mexicans to know that we really, Folsom and Clovis also,
absolutely.
Are in a way the center of this incredible new frontier of old knowledge.
The two sites that are benchmarks for American archaeology are Folsom, because of its importance, and Clovis, which became the Clovis culture, which for my period of in the profession, over 40 years, has been the oldest culture in North America. Now, we have stuff pre-Clovis. We don't know exactly what that is, but we think it is connected to Solutrean.
And so Folsom would be how much pre-Clovis?
It's not. It's post-Clovis.
Oh, okay.
It's about 10,000 years old. Clovis itself is about 13,000 years old.
Right.
And that's full-blown. We don't know what was before yet.
Right,
of course. We're still working on it.
Yeah.
But it is an incredible time to be a so-called archaeologist.
It certainly is. And it's an incredible time to be a New Mexican because we're celebrating our centennial.
That's right.
We all have the romance of what we call now the Old West, 100 years ago when we became a state. But thank you for bringing the romance of our ancient archaeology. Our guest today is Calvin Smith, director of the Western Heritage Museum Complex. Right?
Yes.
In Hobbs, New Mexico, also the Lee County Cowboy Hall of Fame.
That's correct.
Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.